Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness on the BBC World Service with me, Alex Last. And today we take you back 100 years to a controversial incident in the First World War when the ocean liner, the Lusitania, was sunk by a German submarine as it sailed from New York to Liverpool.
In New York, during the weeks preceding the last voyage of the Lusitania, there was much gossip of submarines.
Margaret Haig Thomas, later Viscountess Rhonda, was a passenger on the Cunard Line's luxury liner, the Lusitania. She was recorded by the BBC in 1950.
It was freely stated and generally believed that a special effort was to be made to sink the great Cunarder so as to inspire the world with terror.
By May 1915, the First World War was 9 months old. The powerful British Royal Navy had imposed a naval blockade on Germany. Germany, in turn, unleashed its new weapon, the submarine, or U-boat, against all Allied shipping around the coast of Britain and Ireland. And it was in this atmosphere that the great passenger liner, the Lusitania, or Lucy, as it was known, set sail from New York to Liverpool with 2,000 passengers and crew.
On Saturday, May the 1st, the day on which the Lusitania was to sail, in order that there might be no mistake as to German intentions, the German embassy at Washington issued a warning to passengers, couched in general terms, which was printed in the New York morning papers, directly under the notice of the sailing of the Lusitania.
After almost a week at sea and a calm voyage, the huge ship approached Ireland, and this was an area where U-boats operated.
I went on duty at 2 o'clock in the afternoon watch. It was a beautiful day, the sea was like glass, and as we were going to be in Liverpool the next day, everybody felt very happy.
Leslie Morton was a merchant seaman on the Lusitania.
We hadn't paid a great deal of attention to the threats to sink her because we didn't think it was possible. 2:10, I saw a disturbance in the water, obviously the air coming up from a torpedo tube, and I saw 2 torpedoes running towards the ship, fired diagonally across the course, and the Lucy was making about 16 knots at the time. I reported them to the bridge with a megaphone we had to say torpedoes were coming on the starboard side. And by the time I'd had time to turn round and have another look, they hit her amidships between number 2 and 3 funnels.
There was a dull thud, not very loud, but unmistakably an explosion. My father walked over to look out of a porthole. I didn't wait. As I ran up the stairs, the boat was already heeling over.
When the torpedoes hit the ship, I went down to see if my brother, who was in the other watch down below, had got out. I met him coming up, using seaman's language about it. The ship was heeling over about 35 degrees to starboard by this time, with the inrush of water, which made all the boats on the port side useless. I went straight to my boat station on the top deck, which was number 11 boat on the starboard side. We got her full of people by lowering it down to deck level as the ship heeled over and lowered it into the water.
Shortly after the ship was hit, there appears to have been a secondary explosion within the hull. Its cause is still unknown. It took the Titanic 3 hours to sink. The Lusitania began to roll over and go under in just minutes.
There were a lot of foreign passengers on board, and just after I reached the deck, a stream of these came rushing up from below and fought their way into the boat nearest us, which was being lowered. They were white-faced and terrified. I think they were shrieking. There was no kind of order. The strongest got there first. The weak were pushed aside. Here and there a man had his arm round a woman's waist and bore her along with him. But there were no children to be seen. No children could have lived in that throng. They rushed the boat before it was ready. 2 seamen began to lower the boat, which was full to overflowing. One man lowered his end quickly, the other lowered his end slowly. Half the people fell out.
The ship was heeling over all the time, and with the boat full, we tried to push off from the ship's side, but many of the passengers hung on to the ship. They didn't feel that the big ship should be let go in this little boat they were in. And as the Lucy came farther over, the boat started to tip inboard with all the people in it. And I yelled out to my brother, "Where are you going?" He went over the side at one end, I went at the other.
Whilst we were standing, I unhooked my skirt so that it should come straight off and not impede me in the water. And then, suddenly, I saw that the water had come over onto the deck. I saw the water, green, just about up to my knees. The next thing I can remember was being deep down under the water. It was very dark, nearly black. I fought to come up. I was terrified of being caught on some part of the ship and kept down. That was the worst moment of terror, the only moment of acute terror that I knew.
The whole thing was over in 15 minutes. It takes longer to tell. I remember this collapsible boat slipping off the deck and ultimately got the sides up and in due course picking up people, everybody helping. We got it full of people.
When I came to the surface, I found that I formed part of a large, round, floating island composed of people and debris of all sorts, lying so close together that at first there was not very much water noticeable in between. People, boats, hen coops, chairs, rafts, boards, and goodness knows what besides, all floating cheek by jowl. Many people were praying aloud in a curious, unemotional monotone. Others were shouting for help in much the same slow, impersonal chant. By and by, my legs got bitterly cold. There was no acute feeling of fear while one was floating in the water.
By this time, an hour had gone by. The ship was already down on the bottom, and a trawler called the Indian Empire turned up, the only vessel that was in sight, and we put the first boatload aboard the Indian Empire. I hung on to the boat. There were an awful lot of people still wanting accommodation, so we picked them up, and we had another 35 or 40 people in the boat by the time the destroyers came.
I looked up at the sun, which was high in the sky, and wished that I might lose consciousness. I don't know how long after that it was that I did lose it, but that is the last thing I remember in the water. The next thing I remember is lying naked between blankets on a deck in the dark. I discovered later, on a tiny patrol steamer named the Bluebell. I heard afterwards that I had been picked up at dusk by a rowing boat, that in the gathering darkness they had very nearly missed me. The little boat had transferred me to the Bluebell. I was handed up to it along with a lot of dead bodies, but the midshipman who handed me on board said, "I rather think of some life in this woman. You'd better try and see." So they did. We got into Queenstown Harbour about 11. A man, the steward who had waited at our table on the Lusitania, came on board and told me that my father had been rescued and was already on shore. When we were made fast alongside, he was waiting at the other end of the gangway.
Both the survivors and the dead were brought ashore in Ireland.
And having got ashore, I was a bit worried as to where my brother had got to. By this time, the bodies were being brought in and taken up to a house they'd allocated for the dead in Queenstown. And I went through the various corpses, turning back cloths, looking for my brother. At one bed, a hand turned over the cloth at the same time that I did, and it was my brother. Of course, we were glad to see each other, and we went out and duly proved that we were far from being dead.
1,200 people died in the attack on the Lusitania. Anti-German riots broke out in Britain following the sinking. The German government argued that the ship was a legitimate target, as amongst the cargo was a quantity of war materials. Britain denied this and argued that under international law, nothing could justify the sinking of an unarmed passenger liner without warning, a view much of the world endorsed. The United States was particularly critical of the attack, in which more than 100 Americans died, and it helped turn US opinion against Germany. Though it would be another 2 years before America entered the war. You've been listening to Witness with me, Alex Last. For a complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.